Perth Overnight with John Lewis for Christian James Hairdressing Mount Lawley. 6PR.
Good morning. Good to have your company here at 6PR. And what does it take to be a spook? You hear this term spook quite a lot. And we're going to talk to one right now. His name is Robert Erringer. Now, you may know that name from some of the books he's published, and you might know him about some of the work that he's been up to. Let's have a chat to him right now. Morning there, Robert.
Good morning, John, and morning, Perth.
Great to have your company this morning. Now, you've infiltrated some big organizations, and we'll talk about those soon, and you've written some great books. How did you get started in this business?
Well, it's very kind of you to say those words. I started off as an investigative reporter back in the late 1970s when I lived in London, and I reported for Fleet Street newspapers at a time when there was still a Fleet Street.
Those would have been pretty tough days.
Well, they were good days because back then newspapers actually did investigative reporting. Sadly, that isn't the case anymore. It's all about celebrity showbiz stuff and sports, and everybody's scared to death of doing investigations because they risk the inconvenience of libel suits even when they're telling the truth.
So what kind of stories did you look at the time?
One of my big stories back in 1978 into 1979 was my infiltration of the Ku Klux Klan. The KKK had tried to set up what they call a clavern in the UK, and I got wind of it and managed to get a hold of their imperial wizard in South Carolina, who decided that I should run it for him. Of course, I was operating undercover as an investigative reporter for the Sunday People. Quickly, we managed to get all the names out of them of everybody in the UK who'd wanted to sign up as Klansmen. Lured them all to a hotel room in King's Cross, wired up the room, got them talking about what they wanted to do, took their photographs with a telephoto lens up the street, and had a rather big story. But it didn't end there, because the Imperial Wizard then wanted us, me and a couple of the other undercover reporters, to come to South Carolina and be what he called naturalized into the Klan, which is initiated. So off we went to Spartanburg, South Carolina, and went through the Klan's 30-minute initiation ceremony, after which they brought out the tape measure. Why a tape measure, you may ask? Because they needed to fit us for bespoke robes. Mine was a red one, because they made me what they call a Kleagle, which is Klan speak for officer, because they presumed I would return to the UK and be the leader of the Klan there.
That's right, and I understand you still have that too.
I do. It comes with a purple sash. It's really cool.
How far do you go with infiltration? Because there must come a point where you think, well, we've gone too far in, we're breaking too many laws, or we're hurting too many people. How do you know when enough is enough and you've got all the information you need?
Well, as a journalist, you first of all, you don't break any laws. And you may, and there's a good rationale for doing infiltrations, this kind of undercover journalism. If you cannot get the story you're looking for, and it's important to the public interest, by normal means, which is by asking questions and getting your foot in the door, then infiltration is justified. However, that doesn't mean to say you break any laws. But you ask, how far can you get? Well, I almost went too far because I was... as we were driving from South Carolina into a rally in North Carolina, we discovered that there was a state police roadblock leading into where there was going to be a large Klan rally at the end of the week that we spent in South Carolina. Well, I was driving a rental car, and the Klan, the Imperial Wizard, knew me by an alias. And the only genuine piece of ID I had was my British driver's license, which was in the boot of the car. Well, unfortunately, the Imperial Wizard was sitting right next to me as we were driving in, and I thought, well, this is it. And the two other reporters in the back seat were obviously trying to figure out how fast we could run and where we would run to. There was nowhere to go. Long line of cars behind us, one lane path. So I get out of the car to go around to the boot. I explain to the state trooper my license is in the back, and he says, well, go get it. So I get out of the car, and sure enough, the Imperial Wizard gets out as well and meets me around the other end, and I open the trunk, and I'm sitting here thinking, Jesus, any second he is going to realize I'm not who I claim to be. Just as I'm about to put my hand on my driving license, Bob Scoggins, the Imperial Wizard, leans over to the state trooper, puts out his right hand, and says, hi, I'm Bob Scoggins. I'm the Imperial Wizard for the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. And the state trooper says, well, why didn't you say so? You boys go right on through.
You are kidding me.
That's exactly what happened.
You are kidding me. How did that work out?
Well, it worked out fine. We cruised into the rally. That's when they had our robes ready for us, so we put our robes on, and they lit their cross, what they call a cross lighting. Most people think of it as a cross burning, but the Klansmen do it as a cross lighting because they are celebrating the cross, not burning it down.
So why'd the trooper let you through?
Because he sympathized with the Klan.
That's what I thought. I can't believe it. You just never know where different people will be.
Yeah. So it was a bit iffy for a couple of moments, but we got through it and moved on to a number of other undercover investigations. My specialty on Fleet Street was infiltrating extremist groups.
How about coming up with a bit of a list?
There were neo-Nazi groups, and there was an anarchist group called Class War that was rather vicious and ultimately responsible for the murder of a police officer in London in the early 1980s during a riot that they caused.
Crazy, isn't it? I'm guessing lying has got to be a fairly big part of what you're involved in. How do you learn to lie and lie in such a way that when you go back to your regular life, it doesn't all kind of catch up on you?
Yeah, I call it professional lying. So it's more about deception and deception for professional reasons. And, you know, I've had chats with former CIA people who I've been in contact with over the years and discussed with them how that works. And what people in this profession tend to do is draw a pretty thick line between their professional lives and their private lives. And my own, how that works for me in my own code is if I had a client who came to me and was interested in investigating someone I already knew, I would say no because I would feel that was unethical. Nor would I use a situation that was a personal situation to try to tempt a client to hire me because of some inside knowledge I have on a personal situation. You just try to keep it separate. You tend to weave things about your personal life into whatever your pitch is to whoever it is you're trying to ruse, because what's really important is, so you don't get caught out, you stick to the truth as much as possible. Now, it's important to create a legend for the purpose of rusing whatever the target is, but that's the 2%. The other 98%, you just want to stick to the truth.
So, for instance, if you had to, convince me that you're a fellow radio announcer and I should talk to you about all my radio tricks, what would be your thought process there, Robert?
It'd be real easy, John. What I'd do is I'd get in touch with you. I'd find the best access to reach you, whether it was your own personal email or cell phone. Then I would call you as a literary agent, and I would tell you that you are one of the most wonderful radio talk show hosts in the world, and why haven't you written a book yet? And would you care to think about writing a book about radio hosting, maybe as a how-to to everybody out there who aspires to be a radio host? And everybody, as you know, wants to write a book. And I don't know if you do, but you may have thought about it. But if a literary agent came to you and said, well, I could get you $100,000 advance for a book, and you're the perfect person to write it, you'd probably be tempted to at least discuss it with me. And during that discussion, I would try to find out everything it was I wanted to know.
So simple. Now, this is pretty much what you did with your book's Ruse, was it?
Exactly. Actually, it was an American fellow who defected, CIA officer who defected to the Soviet Union back in 1985.
Now, is vanity, it sounds like it must be such a powerful tool for you.
Well, I think generally people like to talk. And as long as you're a good listener, which you're trained to be, as a radio host, and I'm trained to be based on the work that I've done, people love to talk, and they love a good listener. And if you're willing to sit back and listen, there's nothing they won't tell you.
What about your work involved with the FBI?
Well, that was the Edward Lee Howard situation. That Howard was the CIA officer who defected to the Soviet Union. And the way that started was as a book publishing operation, in this case Howard wanted to write a book from Moscow, where he was living, and he got in touch with a publisher who I knew quite well, and the publisher reached out to me and said, hey, would you like to edit this book? It's right up your street. Well, the publisher wasn't aware that my real bread and butter was private sector intelligence, and as soon as I saw this project, I immediately clicked to the U.S. government has a very deep interest in apprehending Edward Lee Howard, and I thought it would be a good idea to offer my services to do that. So they liked that idea very much, and I became a paid contract agent to put this whole operation together and try and lure him out to a country where we could rendition him and bring him back to the United States.
Have you ever felt that your life was in danger?
You know, I get that asked a lot, especially in light of the recent work that I've done and the action that I've taken. That has to do with Prince Albert and Monaco. Aren't you worried about all these dangerous people? Well, you know, I've been doing this for 30 years, and my answer to that is if anybody doesn't like it, they got to take a number and get in line.
Get in line with all the others. Can you still be doing this work now? Because your name's out there, we've read your books. Can you still get away with a ruse, do you think?
The ruse, not so much. I was doing some private intelligence sector work in the 1990s that I can't talk about, but it resulted in a big story on Salon.com back in 2002. And once that surfaced, I think it was 2001. Once that surfaced on the net, my undercover days were pretty much over. Can I still continue to do the work? Well, you think based on the books that I've written that clients wouldn't want to know. Maybe they'd worry that they were going to get written out in a book. But in fact, what I'm discovering based on some cover stories that were recently done in Europe on my work in Monaco is that I guess, to my surprise, there's a certain notoriety built into that, and now I seem in more demand than before.
Some take-home information, if you don't mind, Robert. For those people running businesses and maybe even security, our security guards tuned in this morning, have we got any take-home safety tips to keep ourselves a little bit safer and more secure from people like yourself?
Oh, I think it's really just the obvious. It's just be cautious whenever you hear from anybody on a cold call, no matter how vain you are and how promising everything sounds, do a little checking. A little due diligence is always called for in this day and age. In my case, it wouldn't have done much good because I had the book publisher in on it with me. But you see, you're not, against a professional, you're probably not going to have much defense other than just not engaging.
Yeah, well, hopefully we won't have to be up against a professional like yourself. Robert, a real delight talking to you, Robert Erringer, having a chat with you this morning. And if you had your time over again, would you do this again? Or is there another career that you think you would like to have had a shot at?
No, I enjoyed this very much. I don't think there's anything I would have preferred to do more than what I've done. Plus, I've been able to write about it. I'm a good writer, stemming back from my newspaper days. And to be able to do the espionage work and then also to be able to write about it when I can, and also write novels, to me is the most wonderful thing in the world.
I've just been asked to ask you this. Did you ever get to work with any cool gadgets? We all know about James Bond and all those amazing gadgets that they seem to just love to pour into the movies. Does any of that stuff ever make it to real life?
You know, I hate gadgets, and most people I know in this business do as well. You can't rely on them. There's nothing like your own memory and taking good notes in the kind of handwriting that nobody would ever be able to read.
Really? You mean like if you've got very good doctor handwriting, that's the best thing to use?
My handwriting is atrocious. So it's better than using any kind of cryptology or code. That's down in Moscow, and they come into my room when I'm out, which I fully expected they would, and they did, and they're looking for notes. If they found something they thought was a cryptographic code, I'd be in big trouble. But if they're actually reading my own handwriting and can't understand it, forget it. Nothing they're going to do about that.
That is really funny. The best spy tool you can have. Good memory and bad handwriting.
I don't like gadgets. In fact, I have a blog, and I've just been writing about some Edward Lee Howard stuff on there because I put him to work writing a spy's guide to Central Europe to keep him happy and try and lure him out. And it was never published. I'm sitting on all this wonderful material, and I thought, well, what should I do with it? And it finally clicked in my mind that I'll just put some of it on my blog. And sure enough, it's finding a lot of interest. But the reason I mention it is because some of his writing dealt with gadgets.
In what way? For or against?
He talks about the whole gamut of things he would take. He even talked about what he as a spy would take on a mission or just for general traveling. And I posted this on my blog if anybody's interested.
Is this the blog that we can find by going to roberterringer.com?
Exactly right. The bottom icon on that takes you, it says blog, and that's where it takes you.
So we go to Robert Erringer, and that's R-O-B-E-R-T-E-R. E-R-I-N-G-E-R, one word, roberteringer.com. That will see it all there, find out about your books, read your blog, and we'll find out more. Just last question, how did you feel when the person you were talking to, maybe you built up some sort of rapport and you realized that at some point you'd have to betray any rapport you built up?
I never had a problem with it. With Edward Lee Howard, the people died as a result of his treachery. A scientist named Tolkachev, who's been spying for the CIA, who he turned in, was executed. I did not have a problem at all knowing that they may one day apprehend Edward Lee Howard. In fact, the Justice Department chickened out at the last minute, and that never happened, even though we could have, because he did go where we wanted him to go, and we could have grabbed him. In any case, he died in 2002, and I feel that it was partly because of this whole operation. The Russians got fed up with him, and I believe they murdered him. Apparently, he broke his neck going down the stairs in his dacha to his basement laundry room. The problem with that story is he didn't have a basement laundry room. The laundry room was adjacent to the kitchen on the ground floor. There was no basement.
You're a lot braver than I am. I think I'll leave that story where it is, and we'll look forward to reading more about you on your blog and in your books. Robert Eringer, thanks for sparing the time.
Well, thank you very much, John. You have a great morning there.